This message comes from OnPoint's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you qualify, and if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. To learn more, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. President Donald Trump says he looks forward to meeting with Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein later this week.
I'm meeting with Rod Rosenstein on Thursday when I get back from all of these meetings, and we'll be meeting at the White House, and we'll be determining what's going on. We want to have transparency, we want to have openness, and I look forward to meeting with Rod at that time.
Well, yesterday, Washington whispers metastasized into quickfire reporting spread over social media. Some news organizations saying Rosenstein had resigned, others saying he was expecting to be fired, still others saying he verbally resigned and was waiting to be fired, and frankly, not sure how you can have both. But it all stems from Friday's New York Times story that claimed Rosenstein had talked about secretly taping the president and invoking the 25th Amendment, both claims that Rosenstein says are, quote, inaccurate and factually incorrect. But even if he's in the job for now, the question is for how long and what impact will that have on the Mueller investigation? So this hour on Point, Rod Rosenstein, the DOJ, and the Mueller investigation. You can join us. Should Rosenstein stay or go? And what impact might that have on the Mueller investigation? And what do you think about the timing of that New York Times story? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, we'll start today in New York with Paula Reed. She's CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. Paula, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much. So good to be with you.
It's great to have you. So first of all, give us a little lay of the land. What happened yesterday? And as of right now, Rosenstein is still in his job. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. He's still the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. So yeah, let's take a look at what happened yesterday. Yesterday, early in the morning, the biggest story was new accusations against the Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, Judge Kavanaugh. And this new round of accusations started to sort of change the conversation to should his accuser be heard, to suddenly should he withdraw? Is this going to get too messy? And amid those headlines, suddenly we start getting reports that the Deputy Attorney General is resigning or had been fired. So I know I reached out to my sources at the Justice Department. And what I learned over those few hours as this story began to take over the news cycle, is that he was on his way to a regularly scheduled meeting at the White House. He was attending a cabinet meeting on behalf of Attorney General Sessions, who was off giving a speech on opioids. But as he was on his way, sources within the Justice Department said that he believed he was going to get fired. Now, why would he be fired? Well, on Friday, the New York Times reported that back in May of 2017, their sources tell them that Rosenstein suggested recording the president and even suggested trying to use the 25th Amendment to oust the president from office. Now, my sources confirm, sources who were in that meeting, they confirmed they did hear this comment about recording, but it was clearly a joke.
Uh-huh.
And meanwhile, none of my sources ever heard him mention the 25th Amendment. And based on my reporting and talking to these sources, it's hard to imagine that at that time, Rod Rosenstein is a very smart man, would truly believe that a 25th Amendment play would actually work. So amid all of this yesterday, the news cycle, sort of we were completely focused on this. But after he met with Chief of Staff John Kelly and went to his regularly scheduled cabinet meeting, Rod Rosenstein left the White House with his job and with an appointment to see the president on Thursday, which is also the day when Kavanaugh's accuser may or may not testify. So once again, on Thursday, this will he, won't he be fired narrative could once again provide a distraction from Judge Kavanaugh.
Okay. So you know what? Thank you so much, Paula, actually, for that rundown, because so much did happen yesterday. But let's just take a step back here quickly, if we can, because, I mean, to a certain degree, when that New York Times story came out, again, which Rosenstein says is completely inaccurate and factually incorrect, that's his response to the Times story. I mean, it almost seemed perhaps not the details of the story, but the revelation of the tensions and concerns that Rosenstein might have had about the president, it seemed inevitable because they have had a tense relationship for the past year at least.
they have, because Rod Rosenstein is the one who oversees the Russia investigation. And people say, well, what does that mean? He has an enormous amount of power to shape this investigation. I'll give you some examples. He has final approval over any charges that are brought. He's the one who's going to decide when Mueller creates his final report, those findings. Rosenstein's the one who decides whether or not that's made public. With a special counsel, there's no requirement for that to be made public. And most importantly, if there's any evidence of criminal wrongdoing on behalf of the president, it's Rod Rosenstein, not Robert Mueller, who decides whether or not those findings get passed on to Congress for impeachment proceedings. So Rod Rosenstein has arguably the most power in the Russia investigation. And we know the president does not like this investigation. He's repeatedly dismissed it as a witch hunt. And he's just very upset at that situation.
Okay. So, but even if we move further back in time, the Mueller investigation, obviously, we're going to talk a lot about in a couple of minutes, but even if we move further back in time, I mean, Rod Rosenstein was the person who wrote that memo that the White House then used to justify its firing of Jim Comey, right?
That's right. Originally, that was the first justification. Rod Rosenstein authored a memo encouraging new leadership at the FBI, specifically because of how the FBI director had handled the investigation into Secretary Clinton's use of a private email server. Rosenstein was very critical of Comey's decision to come and have that press conference to announce there were no charges. That's not what you do when there are no charges. You don't announce no charges, guys. You either come out and announce charges or an arrest, but this is unprecedented. And of course, his subsequent decision to notify Congress when there were new emails in that investigation. Rosenstein was very critical of how Comey handled that whole thing so publicly and suggested there should be new leadership. And initially, the president used that memo and the endorsement of the attorney general to justify firing Comey. But just a few days after he fired him, he said in an interview with NBC something that suggested, in fact, he fired Comey because of the Russia probe.
Right.
So I think a lot of people at that time, I mean, this was an incredible 10-day period between them. Comey was fired and Mueller was appointed when allegedly Rosenstein made these comments. But this was a very chaotic time. I mean, you could argue that the administration had sort of plunged into unprecedented chaos.
Yeah. So, I mean, that you're referencing that Lester Holt interview that the president did with NBC. And then, but I have also seen that Rod Rosenstein resented or was put off by the fact that the White House made his memo public. So maybe that's also a source of uncertainty and tension between him and the president. But Paula Reed, stand by it for just a second here, because I'd like to welcome into the conversation someone that everyone might know, David Folkenflik. He is my co-host of On Point, and also, of course, he's NPR's media correspondent as well. So, David, thanks for joining us before your regular Friday gig.
Magna, pleasure to follow your lead.
Okay, so we really wanted your take on this because I think, a major part of this story is the Times first publishing its piece on Friday, and then, of course, the media reaction as Paula walked us through it on Monday. But let's start with the Times piece on Friday. I mean, there are some folks who are wondering about the questioning of it. I mean, do you have those same they're questioning the timing of it. Do you have those same questions?
It was really interesting to see as it played out. This is a piece by two, quite accomplished investigative reporters for the Times, Michael Schmidt, Adam Goldman, out of their D.C. bureau. People instantaneously reacted to the content of the article, and then there was a lot of immediate reaction, not second-day reaction, but immediate reaction to the timing and the placement of the article, the way in which it was couched, the questioning about the motivation of the sources. That is, they said, you know, this seemed almost perfectly designed to undermine Rosenstein, to, in a sense, strip away, as was quickly expressed by critics of the president, to strip away the protection that Special Counsel Robert Mueller has had in the Deputy Attorney General. He, of course, is the acting Attorney General when it comes to this investigation of the president and his larger circle and their question of their ties to Russia, and has expanded, as we've talked about in recent weeks. So, you know, the people have questioned the motivation of the sources, and they've also questioned the way in which the Times did it. There was the question of the wire.
Yeah.
When Rosenstein said, you know, should I go and wear a wire? Should folks wear a wire when talking to the president about the appointment of a new FBI director to replace the fired James Comey? As we've heard from Paula and other news sources, the Washington Post, other major respected news outlets have said, you know, the Justice Department official has come forward and said this was said effectively, jokingly, sarcastically, somewhat bitterly, not as a plan, not as an intended thing. But, you know, Michael Schmidt, in speaking subsequently to his colleague on the podcast The Daily at the Times, has said, you know, you do have that from the Justice Department trying to diminish the impact and import of that element of the story. And at the same time, you know, we have multiple sources that we have been trying to cultivate to get to tell us about these reservations Rosenstein had at a pivotal moment in the spring of 2017. Who said this was dead serious, and that's how they took it. These are people who hold consequential jobs there.
Yeah. David, forgive me for interrupting you, but since you mentioned Michael Schmidt speaking to the New York Times podcast, The Daily, we've actually got a cut from that. So here he is defending his reporting. This is, again, Michael Schmidt defending his reporting about the Deputy Attorney General on The Daily.
I understand that as we follow the different threads of the Trump story, every piece of reporting is not going to be accepted with open arms. And that's certainly the case here, but that's not really our job. Our job is to dive into what happened and come to a place where we feel confident about the facts that we have.
So that's Michael Schmidt on the New York Times podcast, The Daily. I mean, David, I don't quibble at all with what Schmidt just said here. It's not the job of reporters to be sure to hope that everyone accepts their reporting with open arms. But my question is, but they released a story in which they said that Rosenstein, you know, said certain things about the 25th Amendment, said certain things about wearing a wire, but that none of those things actually happened. So what's the purpose of the story?
Oh, I do think there's some dispositive news value in our knowing that somebody who's acting as the attorney general about the appointment of special counsel invoked the question of the 25th Amendment, something he gave a not complete denial to. He's given a blanket denial to the story, but his denials about certain things like the question of the wire, you know, his people are basically saying it was hedging, saying it was a joke. On the other thing, it's not, to my mind, a very specific denial. I think it's worth knowing if you have the Deputy Attorney General of the United States who's talking about such severe reservations about the president. You know, that is worth knowing. I think the question of the timing here is, you know, is being raised by critics of the president saying is somehow the New York Times being used to undermine this important inquiry that's going on.
Yeah. Well, David Folkenflik, co-host of On Point and NPR's media correspondent. Hang in there, David, because I've got a couple more questions for you when we come back from the break. And Paula Reed, CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. Paula, stand by as well. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from On Point's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing their all-new Rate Shield approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, about the Mueller inquiry and about what might happen following Rosenstein's meeting with President Donald Trump on Thursday of this week. I'm joined today by Paula Reed. She's CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. And also with us today is David Folkenflik. He, of course, is co-host of On Point and also NPR's media correspondent. He's wearing that media correspondent hat for us today. David, just one more question here before I let you go, because I know you're a busy guy. But you know how Paula was walking us through in the earlier segment all the confusion, actually beginning Friday, but really coming to a head yesterday over whether or not Rosenstein was resigning or had he been fired. I mean, you have spoken eloquently before about sort of the role that the media plays right now in our understanding of these very complex and important events. I'm just wondering, like, what was your take on all that happened yesterday?
Yesterday morning in particular was just a complete mess. I mean, it was as though you were watching ingredients being thrown out on a kitchen countertop and people were describing what the dish was going to be before it was even put into the pot. You know, like nobody knew really what was happening. What it seemed as though there was leaking and counter-leaking and hedging and counter-hedging. And the God's honest truth is the actual actors in the drama that was playing out may not have known themselves at that time what was going to happen. Axios, I think Jonathan Swan was the reporter who said that Rosenstein had had resigned to the chief of staff, John Kelly, and he said since that he regrets the phrasing that he used. He should have said that he was, you know, willing to resign, or you know, was expecting to have to resign. You know, there were all this hedging that goes on, and I think people spoke with clarity. I think it's driven by the combination of the way in which news unfolds on cable and on Twitter, and I think people wanted to get there first and instead got ahead of the facts, way ahead of the facts. And I also think this is a point in which you're seeing a complete division between the imperatives and the impulses of the White House and of the Justice Department. And therefore, you have an administration divided against itself, in which case sources have both different agendas, different impulses here, and also different spins on what's happening. And I think you're watching reporters being spun in real time.
Yeah. I wonder, is it worth sort of if we look across recent history here, and there are some people who say that they believe that even though the New York Times might have very well-connected and well-sourced reporters in Washington, that, you know, they look back at the run-up to the Iraq War and they say, well, the Times has shown that it's allowed itself to be used as an inadvertent mouthpiece for in an administration's agenda. Do you see any sign of that here?
Well, you don't even have to go as far back as that. I think the Times, you know, was very defensive about its handling of some of the allegations and revelations about Hillary Clinton, the question of her email servers and conflating that with the leaks of emails. I think the way in which before the election, they essentially buried questions raised by law enforcement and national security officials about the Trump administration, about the hack, excuse me, of Democrats by the Russians. And the Times misplayed a number of these things and is often exceptionally reluctant to acknowledge that. I think they're really resistant to certain kinds of public accountability. And I think the lack of a public editor or ombudsman there at times glares. At the other hand, I think they've done some exceptional accountability journalism in the age of Trump. I mean, mm-hmm. just really sterling stuff. They and the Washington Post seem to sort of go neck and neck and vie for this on an almost daily basis. But even the reporters coming on for some criticism now for the Rosenstein story have been heralded by both lawmakers and you know, citizens who are critical of Trump or just concerned about the direction of the government in the Trump era for the kind of accountability they provided. The Times proves to be a very mortal institution, even as it's a pretty tremendous one. We'll see in time how we'll feel about this particular piece.
Well, David Folkenflik is NPR's media correspondent, and he is, of course, also co-host of this program of On Point. David, thank you very much, and we'll see you on Friday.
You bet.
All right, Paula Reed, let me just turn back to you quickly because we have a comment here on our website from someone who's calling themselves Honest Debate 2. And this person says, tense relationship? There is no relationship. The DOJ has systematically, covertly, and illegally worked to unseat a duly elected president. That may not be a unique opinion here among some of our listeners. So I'm just wondering what you might say to that.
Well, President Trump is still the president of the United States. And the fact is that this investigation has been going on for quite some time. It actually predates his election, looking in, not necessarily the Trump campaign, but just looking into any sort of Russian interference in the campaign. And while the president and his allies, they like to say that this is politically motivated, that this is a witch hunt, the fact is they weren't really looking into the president at the outset. This was a counterintelligence investigation. But then when they started looking into the campaign specifically, they uncovered different criminal activity. We know that at least three of the president's close associates have entered into plea deals, cooperation deals with special counsel. In addition, also George Papadopoulos, who I don't think it's fair to characterize him as a close mm-hmm. associate. And, you know, we have well over a dozen other people and companies who have been charged in this investigation. In terms of the president's role, well, there are questions about whether the president or anyone in his family conspired with Russians to help the campaign in any way. So far, it does not appear that there's any evidence of that. But now we also have this second branch, which has come about, which is questions about obstruction of justice and whether the president tried to use his authority to tamp down or influence this investigation. So while a lot of people, again, they like to say this is a conspiracy or this is a deep state type of action, the fact is most of the people running this, even people the president selected, are lifelong Republicans.
Right.
And so far, this investigation is bearing fruit. In many instances, it's people who the president hired and trusted and had close to him who are saying, yep, I did it.
Right. So we're talking about Paul Manafort
and
Michael Cohen and Michael Flynn. Right.
Yeah, well, it's important to note that Michael Cohen is a slightly different investigation. I mean, that's actually not special counsel.
Out of the Southern District of New York. Correct.
Exactly. A sister investigation that was passed off. But then the other one is, of course, Richard Gates. Deputy Campaign Chairman.
It's getting hard to keep them.
It's very hard.
Paula, hang on here for just a second. I want to take a quick call here. Let's go to Karen, who's calling from Ames, Iowa. You're on the air, Karen.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think the article was irresponsible, and I think we are distracting ourselves from the fact that Russia is a dangerous country, and no matter who or what or when. And I'm saying this as a former Republican. I was a Republican for 20 years. I shortly became an independent not long ago. But let's stick to the facts. Russia is a dangerous country. If we colluded in any way, I don't care who, Republicans, independent, citizen, whoever, we need to get to the bottom of this. So I think that was an irresponsible article. It never talked about Rosenstein as far as what his comments or what his opinion was on that piece.
Well, Karen, let me just ask you a quick question. You heard David Folkenflik, my co-host and NPR media correspondent, say that he does think there's some value in the public knowing what the Deputy Attorney General of the United States might have been saying or thinking about the president. Do you not agree with that?
Might have been saying or might have been thinking about the president, but there was no commentary on the story specifically about what he said. Nobody called Rosenstein and asked him, what was your portion? As far as I know, there wasn't any comment on that from the other side. And I think if we're going to be fair about our articles, and I like the New York Times also, but this was disappointing. I think that there should have been input from Rosenstein in that article.
Well, there was, to be fair to the Times, there was input. There's a line here that says Mr. Rosenstein disputes the account, and they have a quote from him. He says, the New York Times story is inaccurate and factually incorrect. I will not further comment on a story based on anonymous sources who are obviously biased against the department and advancing their own personal agenda. So they did get his say in there.
Right. But we need to keep our eyes on the main thing, which is Russia.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous country. And we're losing ourselves in details here, and this Russia investigation could stop.
Karen, point well taken on that. And in fact, because of what you just said, I want to bring in a couple of other voices into this conversation. Claire Finkelstein joins us. She's with us today from Philadelphia. She's a professor of law and philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania and director of the Center for Ethics and the Rule of Law. Claire Finkelstein, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
Also with us is Jonathan Turley. He's professor of public interest law at the George Washington University, legal scholar who's written extensively on areas ranging from constitutional law to legal theory. And we have a link to his recent op-ed titled Insubordination versus Obstruction. Has the New York Times given Trump his long-sought license to clean house at justice? That link is at onpointradio.org. Jonathan Turley, welcome to you.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
So, Claire, let me just start with you. You heard our caller there from Ames, Iowa, saying that she thinks that we're losing sight of the big picture here with all the details around how the Times reported its story, but that she's deeply concerned that the Mueller investigation could be compromised or brought to a halt because of this uncertainty over Rosenstein. What would you say?
Well, she's exactly right. And the president is surely dimly aware that he's walking a very fine line here as he balances his ardent desire to put a halt to the special counsel investigation against his need to avoid committing obstruction of justice. He is trying to get rid of the investigation in any way he can. And I think the caller is certainly right to be concerned that the investigation is under serious threat at the moment.
Well, we even have the president's own attorney, Jay Sekulow, calling for a, quote, timeout on the Mueller investigation in case Rod Rosenstein does resign or is fired. Sekulow said this on his radio program yesterday.
It's really important that there be a step back taken here and a review. And I think it's a review that has to be thorough and complete, and a review that has to include an investigation of what has transpired with all of these statements and all of these allegations going back to the Strachan page and Bruce Orr, and basically a timeout on this inquiry.
Jonathan Turley, a timeout, I guess it may not have a fixed amount of time to it, but what do you make of the fact that the president's lawyer is already saying this?
I make nothing of it because it's facially ridiculous. There won't be a timeout, nor should there be. I don't seriously believe that the Mueller investigation is under threat at this point, regardless of what happens on Thursday. Various Republican senators have come forward to say that they would not stand by and allow the Mueller investigation, for Mueller to be fired or the investigation to be ordered to a close. They've indicated that they feel that he has to be able to complete his investigation. So is it possible that Trump could ignore all that? Certainly, but it's not quite likely. Now, whether Thursday is a day that we could see the termination of Rosenstein, that is obviously a real possibility. The take on the article is really in the eye of the beholder. Some people actually viewed, and my first reaction to the article was that it was trying to prompt Trump into firing Rosenstein. I mean, I admit I've been living in D.C. too long, but this sort of had the fingerprints of someone who was trying to get Trump to unleash a fury at that moment and just fire him, not necessarily one of his allies. In fact, many people have pointed fingers at McCabe and others who might have wanted to see the president make a misstep.
Mm-hmm. Claire, let me just turn back to you quickly. I mean, I'm not sure I hear the same confidence in your take as in Jonathan's about the Mueller investigation being secure for now.
I do wish I agreed with Jonathan entirely on that. I do think there's a lot more risk here. If Rod Rosenstein is fired, there could be a number of repercussions. First of all, as Jonathan himself pointed out in his excellent op-ed, Trump could try to make a recess appointment for the deputy attorney general and put someone in place who he felt convinced would be really cooperative to his point of view and would try to tamp down the Mueller investigation. I think that's a serious concern. It would be a mistake on Trump's part, in my belief, to do something like that, because it's critical that the person overseeing the Mueller investigation have congressional buy-in, mm-hmm. so that whatever he does, whether it's ultimately to prop up the investigation or to tamp it down, that there is congressional buy-in and a sense of legitimacy to his actions. So Trump could end up being his own worst enemy, as he very often is, in trying to control the results. Another hope, though, is that if he does fire Rod Rosenstein, we don't know what Noel Francisco, who is currently the Solicitor General, who would step into Rod Rosenstein's position, we don't know what he would do with the investigation. He's very likely to believe that the Mueller investigation should continue and to be fairly robust on that point. We may be facing a sort of Saturday night massacre again. Mm-hmm. Such as when President Nixon tried to get rid of Archibald Cox and had to run through a number of people before he got ultimately Robert Bork to fire him. So we could see a lot of resistance, I think, to having Mueller fired. And that firing Rod Rosenstein won't do it.
Right.
But I do think the country's in a different position from where it was in 1973.
Well, Paula Reed, you cover the Justice Department. I mean, do you have any insights or can you give us any insights about Noel Francisco, as Claire Finkelstein just pointed out? I mean, what do we know about what he thinks about the Mueller investigation?
Well, I've asked him this a few times. I see him around the Justice Department. Sometimes he's out by my live shots, and I've asked this question to him many times. What would you do? And he's ignored me. So, unfortunately, I've been forced to rely on his career, on the things that he's written, on the things that he's argued. And I think the difference that you would see is I do think that he has a more limited view of the Justice Department's independence. And I think what you might see under him is a slightly more tailored version of the Russia investigation. I'm going to give you an example. Paul Manafort, for example, his trial was sort of bifurcated. He had two different trials. The first case, it was mostly related to his personal business dealings and failure to pay taxes and other sort of crimes that really had nothing to do with Russia. And there was some argument that perhaps that case should have just been passed off to a U.S. attorney in Virginia. I think if Noel was to take over, I think you might see him being a little more strict about stuff like that and be like, look, this particular, I understand you're trying to pressure a witness, which is what the judge said. I get that you're trying to pressure a witness to talk about what he knows about the Trump Tower meeting and anything he knows about ties to Russia. But the fact is, this trial has nothing to do with Russia. I think in that instance, you might have seen Noel be like, look, give that case to the U.S. attorney. And if you get him to flip, great, you can have him back for Russia. So I think you might see a more tailored special counsel investigation. But I don't see any situation in which he would shut it down or try to get rid of the grand jury or anything like that.
Right. So, Jonathan Turley, we've just got about 30 seconds here to go before the break. But would a more tailored version, as Paula Reed is telling us, of the Mueller investigation, would Congress buy into that?
Oh, I think it would. Quite frankly, some of us believe that the Manafort trial should have been referred to local U.S. attorneys. I don't think it would make a big difference in terms of the core of the investigation. The other thing to keep in mind is that he may have a conflict himself when he assumes this position, because his law firm represented the Trump campaign. So he first has to deal with his own conflict before he goes forward.
Well, Jonathan Turley, Claire Finkelstein, and Paula Reed, stand by here for just a second. We're talking about Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, about the Department of Justice, about the Mueller investigation, and what might happen following Rosenstein's meeting with the president on Thursday. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
How much would you pay to avoid morning traffic? Why are plane tickets to Boise so expensive? I'm Cardiff Garcia, co-host of The Indicator. In every episode, we take on a new, unexpected idea to help you make sense of the day's news. Listen every afternoon on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking today about Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, about the Department of Justice, and about the Mueller investigation and what might happen in particular to the Mueller investigation following Thursday's planned meeting between President Donald Trump and the Deputy Attorney General. I'm joined today by Paula Reed. She's CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. We're also joined by Claire Finkelstein. She's professor of law and philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania, and by Jonathan Turley. He's professor of public interest law at the George Washington University. What do you think might happen to the Mueller investigation if, and it is a big if, Rod Rosenstein is no longer deputy attorney general as of Thursday? Want to know what you think. Let's go to Jorge, by the way, who's calling from Palmetto, Florida. Jorge, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Love the show, by the way. You know, honestly, my thoughts on this, and just to preface this, you know, I would prefer to see a non-conservative judge, you know, put as opposed to Brett Kavanaugh. So just wanted to start off by saying that. But I think that in this case, we're seeing information being used as a weapon by, you know, by both parties to seek, you know, their own political gain. In the case of the Democrats, that, you know, I find it very, you know, very oddly convenient that this information came out. And I'm not trying to discredit Ford or any other accuser. You know, I can't say with certainty that whether he did these things or not, but, you know, definitely the release of the information is very convenient if the goal is to stop his nomination or to prolong it.
I see. Jorge, I'm going to jump in there, but thank you so much for your call, because I want to go now to Rebecca, who's calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. You're on the air, Rebecca.
Thank you for taking my call. I have another option that I think might be considered by President Trump. I would accept Rosenstein's resignation, say thank you very much, take the position off the books, not put Neil anywhere, and let Jeff Sessions decide if he wants to work anymore. He's either going to start to work more actively or not. And either way, Mueller reports to Trump. That's a good way to quiet what's going on with the DOJ, who doesn't seem to know what their job is anymore.
Rebecca, thank you for your call. Paula Reed, let me just turn that to you. Would such a thing even be possible for Robert Mueller to eventually report to the president directly?
I don't think so, because under the special counsel statute, the special counsel, whoever that is, reports to the attorney general. And the thing is, if you get rid of the deputy attorney general and don't replace that position, first of all, the attorney general can't unrecuse himself. It just wouldn't be right. politically tenable. But the deputy attorney general does a lot more than oversee Mueller. I'm sure that's about 5% of his daily workload. The deputy attorney general, it's usually something you don't know, they oversee the day-to-day operations of the Justice Department in many ways under this administration, partly because Sessions has recused himself in Russia and because he doesn't have the greatest relationship with the president. Rod Rosenstein has become and made that job really one of the most powerful jobs in the Justice Department. But to not have a deputy attorney general and to expect that Sessions could do not only the work of the attorney general, which is traveling the country, sort of carrying the message of the administration, but and the day-to-day running of this enormous organization. And remember, the FBI, ATF, the U.S. Marshals, they all answer to the attorney general. I just don't think that's the way the Justice Department could actually function.
Well, I just want to play a little bit of the response that we've heard over the past couple of days from either side of the aisle in Congress. First of all, this is Representative Matt Gaetz, Republican of Florida, responding yesterday to the news surrounding Rod Rosenstein. He was on CNN's Cuomo Primetime.
Let's take the facts in the light most favorable to Rod Rosenstein, that he was joking, that it was a moment to relieve tension. I don't think it's appropriate to joke about taking an action against the institution of the presidency while you're overseeing an investigation.
Fireable?
Probably, depending on the context.
On the other hand, Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, warned that if the president fired Rosenstein, according to Blumenthal, that could be crossing a line.
If Rod Rosenstein is fired, which in my view is the only way he would leave the Department of Justice, it will be a break the glass moment. Our democracy will be under attack. The president will be, in effect, obstructing justice.
Claire Finkelstein, Democrats have been saying if the president ended the Mueller investigation, they've been saying that would be an obstruction of justice. But would firing the deputy attorney general amount to the obstruction of justice as well?
I think unquestionably it would, because, of course, as you pointed out earlier in the program, he has all sorts of powers over the investigation. And it's really critical that he be able to exercise those powers, especially at the moment that Special Counsel Mueller produces his report. So any attempt to interfere with the autonomy of the Deputy Attorney General over this matter would unquestionably be obstruction of justice. Now, the one question is, if Rosenstein resigns rather than is fired, would that constitute obstruction of justice? And that's, I think, a little bit more complicated. I certainly hope that Rosenstein will not resign and will, in effect, force his firing if Trump is determined to get rid of him. But if it turns out that, in fact, the Times reporting shows that the Times got played a little bit, that the administration may have been behind these reports, then it starts once again to look like a grand scheme to get rid of Rosenstein and interfere with the investigation. That would be obstruction.
Jonathan Turley, let me get your take on here. I mean, Claire is very clear on her view that if the president fired Rod Rosenstein, it would be obstruction of justice. Would you agree?
I'm afraid I wouldn't agree with Claire on that point. I think that firing Rosenstein would be a serious mistake, and I've said that previously. He should be allowed to continue in his position. But I've always questioned the view of people on what constitutes a crime of obstruction. There's often a disconnect with the actual criminal code on that point. I can't imagine a court would take this type of act and treat it as obstruction. The reason is simple. The court would have to rule on the motivations of the president. They'd have to say, well, you were doing this to obstruct the investigation, even though by doing it, you didn't necessarily change the investigation. Firing Rosenstein does not necessarily change the investigation one iota. And so you would be engaging in a level of conjecture that courts are not comfortable with. Moreover, the president can say, look, it's true. I'm no fan of the Russian investigation, but the New York Times is standing by its report that this was not made in jest, that this was one of my subordinates talking about secretly taping me and essentially creating a trap. That's insubordination. And if Bill Clinton believed that to be true, he would have fired his deputy attorney general, and so will I. Now, is that a plausible argument? For critics, it is not. But for a court, they are very reluctant to engage in speculation when there is a cognizable defense.
Yeah.
And in this case, he could argue, look, this is as insubordinate as you can get. He's talking about trapping me and forcing me out of office.
Well, Claire, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, I very much disagree with that because, look, one Exhibit A in President Nixon's obstruction of justice was the firing of Archibald Cox. So we have this situation all over again. And moreover, the Times story is really not entirely credible. It's very hard to believe that Rosenstein said and did those things. And there's been a lot of people who know him and people who report hearing what he said who cast it in a very different light. I think the Times was really out ahead of itself in trying to get this story out. It was incautious in producing the story without having sources who were willing to go on the record and be examined in what they were saying so that one could probe the veracity and reliability of what those sources thought they had heard, thought they knew. And I think the whole thing will turn out to be a little bit more of the administration's making. At least that's my concern.
Jonathan, I heard you want to get in there.
Well, my only problem is that people are objecting to the fact that these aren't named sources and, you know, they're not able to be questioned. Those same objections weren't made when unnamed sources were used on other stories. And this is what's going to make a court uncomfortable to start saying, okay, I'm just going to say that this story is irresponsible. Those other unnamed sources were responsible. The question is, does the president have a legal basis to terminate? But more importantly, he's not firing Archibald Cox. He's not firing Mueller yet. He could very well put Francisco in, who will continue this investigation as most people expect, without any change in the status of the investigation. That's quite different from what Richard Nixon did.
Hmm. Really appreciated that, actually, that analysis from both of you just now. And they're important issues to keep in mind. I mean, I guess all that we know for sure so far, though, is that they're meeting on Thursday and we don't know what's going to happen there. So let me just get a couple of calls in here before I run out of time. Amy is calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're on the air, Amy.
Hello. What I wanted to say is, as Americans, we have the freedom of speech and we have the right to discuss the issues that are confronting us. So when I think about Rod Rosenstein, back when Trump, when he was alleged to have said all this stuff, he had every right to discuss what was going on, because what if Trump had been insane? It was his job to communicate with everybody to see whether or not this is something that needs to be dealt with. So I'm a little surprised that everybody acts like this is such a big deal, because I think, to me, Rod Rosenstein was doing a good job. And all I can hope is that every other politician, both Democratic and Republican, were also discussing it, because that man, Donald Trump, was scary back then. He's scary now, in my opinion, but he was also very scary back then.
Mm.
So I don't see what the big deal is.
Well, so, Amy, let me just ask you quickly. I mean, perhaps the big deal is that the New York Times is asserting that the Deputy Attorney General of the United States was saying these things about the President of the United States. It's not just, you know, any old person on the corner. So that's what makes it a big deal.
Well, why it's not a big deal is we're a democracy, and he's not a king. He's not a monarch. He's not a fascist leader. He's our, like, head administrator. And he, when you take that position, your job is to do the best job for the rest of us. It's not for us to accommodate him. It's for him to do a good job for us.
Yeah.
And all the rest of us have the right to question. If he can't lead us right, we have to figure out how to get him out.
Well,
if we don't have evidence, then we can't do that. But we have the right to look for the evidence, because he works for us.
Amy, thank you so much for your call. We've got time for one more here, so let's go to Brian, who's calling from Roanoke, Virginia. You're on the air, Brian.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening to your last caller, and I wonder if she'd feel the same way if one of the people who may have reported to her had similar feelings about her in her work environment. I think she might sing a different tune. I think the I don't think Rosenstein's going to resign. I don't think Trump has any intentions of firing him. I think that this New York Times article is meant to get all the talking heads talking and to create a lot of chaos and controversy, which is apparently a very successful doing. I guess we'll all find out on Thursday. I think the Russian investigation should definitely continue, but only if they're looking at all forms of collusion within Russia. We don't hear anything about the meetings before and after the Trump Tower that occurred with people on the left side of the aisle, shall we say. Yeah. So as long as he's being thorough and he's looking at Russia collusion as a whole and following the money trails of the dossier payments and the interaction with Fusion GPS, then I think he should absolutely continue and get to the bottom of everything and let the chips fall where they may, be they Republican or Democrat.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for your call. You know, Paula Reed, let me turn back to you here. We just got a couple minutes to go. One thing which I haven't asked you is we've been focusing on Rod Rosenstein, on the president, but what's the mood in the Justice Department right now as a whole? There's been a lot of scrutiny from both Republicans and Democrats placed on the Justice Department, a lot of tumult, it feels. I mean, when you walk the halls there, what do you see? What are people saying?
Well, I see people who don't want to talk to reporters, but the people who will talk to us will indulge us. I mean, rank and file, morale is not great. There's a lot of people who argue that they wish that the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, would defend them more vigorously instead of doing what he's doing, which is pretending like the president isn't saying he literally doesn't exist, or saying the FBI is in tatters. They wish that their leader would step up and defend them, because the fact is Russia, Hillary's emails, those were teeny tiny pieces of the entire puzzle that they're working with every single day. And one other thing that a lot of people have reached out to me to talk about, and I agree with, is this whole idea that Rod Rosenstein was suggesting using the 25th Amendment to oust the president in May 2017, which is what the Times reported, and that he believed Jeff Sessions and Chief of Staff Kelly, who then was heading the Department of Homeland Security, the idea that Rod Rosenstein, who's a very smart man, would think that these folks would go along with a plan to try to get two-thirds of Congress to oust the president way back in May of 2017, nothing about that really rings true to me. It's not logical. It just doesn't seem like this was something he would have seriously floated. And all the people inside the Justice Department agree with me on that. The other thing we all agree on is Rod Rosenstein, he makes a lot of dad jokes. I mean, anytime there's a tense moment, he jokes. It's almost reflexive. So the idea that he might mention wiretapping in a sarcastic way makes a lot more sense than him seriously raising that possibility in mixed company. Think of who else was in that room.
Yeah.
Andrew McCabe. You think Andrew McCabe was very happy with Rod Rosenstein at that time, having just fired Comey? No. Lisa Page, another person there who right now isn't very happy. So when we talk about these events, I think it's really important to put the full context around them. I'm at the Justice Department all the time talking to people who are there. The idea that he would have was seriously suggesting these two things way back then, and that he seriously thought these people would go along with him, it just does not ring true.
Dad jokes can get you in trouble, apparently.
They can.
In Washington.
He said he's made some. They're off the record. I won't repeat them, but you kind of look at it and you're like, that's kind of funny, but kind of awkward.
Well, Jonathan Turley and Clara Finkelstein. Jonathan, I'll just start with you. We've literally got like 30 seconds to go. Do you just have a last quick thought to share with us, Jonathan?
Well, I certainly think that many people in Washington, and it may be the universal view outside the White House, hopes that there is not a firing on Thursday. But it's hard to believe that this great setup was for nothing. If he is fired, it does restrict what the president can do in terms of replacing him under the Vacancies Act. That does go to the Solicitor General. If he resigns, the president has a greater hand, and indeed he could select someone of his greater choosing.
Well, Jonathan Turley, professor of public interest law at the George Washington University, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Claire Finkelstein, my apologies to you. I kind of mistimed the end of the show here, run out of time, but professor of law and philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Paula Reed, CBS News correspondent covering the Justice Department, the White House, and legal affairs. Paula, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.